T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
Pro Football Talk.
I wouldn't listen to some of those people out there, especially guys like Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
Mike Florio is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He of ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, etc., is with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Buddy.
Well, we're getting the news that the NFL is trying to figure out how many people are going to be allowed into stadiums, and it sounds like there's going to be no uniform policy here, that this is going to be down to whether it's state or municipality and the ease or safety with which this can be done, correct?
Yes, competitive balance goes out the window when up to $3 billion are on the line. And that's the estimate from the NFLPA as to what will be lost if the games proceed throughout the season without fans. So if you go into the year accepting that that's the money that you're losing, then any games that can proceed with any number of fans becomes money that you're making. And there's been so much talk about what may happen with the salary cap next year if the revenues are down this year, as they surely will be. Every dollar that goes through the turnstile, that goes through the concession stand, that goes through the counter that sells the jerseys, that goes through the parking, all that money will help prop up the salary cap for all teams in 2021. And that's why they've got no qualms. And it doesn't surprise me at all about the possibility that some teams will be playing with no home field advantage and other teams will be playing with fans there who will make noise when the opposing offense has the ball. And there may not be enough fans there for it to make a difference, but still, having fans present can energize a team at the right time, and having no fans present removes that extra edge. And it doesn't matter if there is that disparity as far as the NFL is concerned.
Could they balance it out by allowing some artificial fan noise and or sound effects and or music? Would there be a way to do that fairly to try to smooth the differences?
There was an item over the weekend. I think it was Steve Serby of the New York Post interviewed Mark Cuban. And one of the things that came up is that they're thinking about, for this Orlando bubble, an app that allows fans to create noise in the stadium based upon the noise that they input into their phones. And there's all sorts of things you can do. The problem is, how in the world do you ever reach a point where it is fair and equitable and it does accurately reflect the amount of decibels that would otherwise be generated? Do you go back and track what the normal decibel levels were in games with fans present, and the average decibels at Soldier Field or X, and in Carolina it's this, and you're allowed to have a certain amount, and on top of everything else they have to worry about this year, you throw on top of it this potentially complicated effort to determine, enforce, and police the correct amount of fake sound that's being piped through speakers at the various stadiums. I just think that that's more than they want to deal with, and on top of it, it introduces more people into the mix on game day.
You said something last week that I probably should have followed up on, and that was the idea of players maybe wanting to expose themselves to coronavirus to either have a light or asymptomatic case that would then allow them to have antibodies that would make them more likely to stick on a roster and or be available. Now, I don't know if there's anything anybody's learned anything more about that, but I did read something yesterday about the belief in a possible competitive advantage to having significant players already recovered from the virus at some point before the end of the season, making them, at least for a time being, as is believed, immune or as close to immune as can be, and then they can just proceed apace. And it's the last thing I thought of. And there's something kind of wrong about all of it, of this idea of, yeah, now I've had it and I've gotten over it and now I'm Superman and let's go play football.
I mean, let me preface this by saying I think it's ridiculously irresponsible for anyone to contemplate doing this because, and I don't know where you go to expose yourself to the coronavirus. It's not like it's something you can order on Amazon and throw it down on the ground and it busts open and the virus makes its way into your body. I mean, it's just a weird concept and it is irresponsible. It is wrong and no one should be doing it. But the reality is, and also we don't know enough about what it means to test positive for the coronavirus antibody. Is it a golden ticket that gets you through a football season? Does it mean you don't have to worry about getting sick from it or passing it to someone else? We still don't know what all of that means. But I'll tell you this, when I talk to certain people, specifically agents, and the topic comes up, you know, when the way someone responds, you kind of get the sense that they don't really want to tell you what they, you know, like, like, I feel like some guys, especially fringe guys, guys who cannot make it 2 or 3 weeks of being quarantined and ultimately go from the 90-man roster to the 53-man roster, especially in a year with no offseason program, no opportunity for undrafted guys or veterans who may be on the bubble to really prove that they can do it, the last thing you want is to be put on the sideline. And I think there's a real temptation for some of these guys who regard themselves as fringe players to show up with this protection, with this extra suit of armor. It's kind of like the PED conversation in a warped Twilight Zone sort of a setting where
it's warped. It is so warped.
But let me tell you, put yourself in the shoes of the guy who's trying to make it in the NFL and think about the risks that you take when you walk onto a football field every time you go out there. On the list of things that could seriously impair you or kill you, the coronavirus is several steps down, if not even in the top 10, right? So for the same reason that someone would use HGH or steroids or something else to speed his return, that's what we always hear. That's the excuse. Well, he was trying to get back quickly from an injury. Well, it's still a banned substance, but he's trying to get back. He wants to be present. He wants to be available. And one way to make yourself available proactively is to already have the antibodies so you don't have to worry about getting knocked out for 2 or 3 weeks, either during training camp or during the season, and someone else takes your place. And I can't help but think that there are guys out there who have at least contemplated this, if not already done it. And think about it. I mean, I know people that are anxious to get the antibody test, and I'd kind of like to get the antibody test because, hey, if I've already had it, I mean, I had some crud back in January when we were down in Miami for the Super Bowl, and I'm kind of thinking, hey, maybe I don't have to worry about this. Maybe I've already had it. It's that same mindset. Not that you would ever intentionally expose yourself to it as a normal person, but if you're a football player who doesn't want to be shelved for 2 or 3 weeks, I can see where that temptation would arise. And I hope that there are enough adults in the room who influence and advise these guys to tell them, do not do this.
Yeah, the public health aspects and the legal aspects of it, too. If there were transmission from somebody who got it on purpose, and then would there be liability on the part of the team or the NFL saying, look what this guy did because you're bringing football back. You made him do this, and it got in here, and it got into a nursing home. I mean, the mind reels.
Can you imagine what would happen? Now, here's the problem, and I know that there will be an entire industry of litigation that arises from this pandemic. And I don't know how you ever trace exposure, causation, whatever. There'll be a lot of doctors who make a lot of money testifying on both sides of the issue, one doctor saying yes and the other one saying no. That's how the legal system works in these kinds of cases anyway. But if there's any type of a paper trail or a digital trail of team employees kind of tacitly saying, well, do what you got to do, or hey, that's not a bad idea, or hey, we're not telling you to do it, you know, you're, you know, anything that could be characterized as a nudge, a subtle nudge to go ahead and do it. Because if you're the coach, you know, all they want is guys that are available. And they look at this like anything else. It's a new injury. It's a new illness. It's a new thing to worry about that could make guys not available. And if there's a way to determine ahead of time that they're not going to become unavailable in October, November, December. Yeah, look,
it's insane, though. Like, no one else can catch a pulled hamstring.
Right. Well, you know, I know.
Grandma's not going to die because your knee hurts.
I know. I mean, that's the thing. And that's why I think it's important for us to say this should not happen. But I think we're being naive if we say, oh, no one's going to do that. Because look around. Look at how people are behaving. You've got the NFL Players Association issuing to all players a recommendation to stop joint workouts until training camp opens. And then Tom Brady flaunts his workouts with teammates. Posted on social media with the caption, no excuses, standing within 3 feet of Rob Gronkowski, a middle finger to the union that is there to represent the interests of all players. It is amazing to me what we are living through now, the no mask brigade. We are in the Twilight Zone. You realize that. This whole year is an extended episode of the Twilight Zone, and I'm just waiting to find out that it's a cookbook.
How to serve man, if I remember
correctly. That's exactly,
correctly.
To serve and, man.
To serve
literally.
Man, yes. And if we had a conversation a little while ago on the show about the return of baseball, and a caller brought up the idea that there could be police brutality protesters who understand the visibility and all the eyes on baseball games and would be able to bring local protests there simply for the appropriate attention and tension that could occur. Has the NFL thought about that? Has the NFL addressed that? That regardless of what they do internally and what they do with their game presentation and what they do with their public service announcements and how they handle everything and their role in it, could their games and these whatever gathering it may be, the stadiums, actually be used as staging areas to get attention, and are they concerned about it?
Well, think about just the broader picture here. You have stadiums that can't be used for the purposes of playing games because of state, local, county ordinance. But unless there's a stay-at-home order, right, people can show up. Think about it. They can show up in the parking lot and watch the game on TV and have a communal event there. That's just part of it. That's separate and apart from what people could do to use it as an occasion to show up and protest. But it's got the potential to be this, the latest episode of the Twilight Zone, where you've got thousands of people outside of the stadium. None of them can get inside the stadium. They're all watching the game or doing whatever they do to gather outside of the stadium to send a message or to just be there, but they can't get in because of the pandemic. And in reality, the crowd that's outside, how they're pressed together, is even more at risk than they would be if there would be some sort of modified seating arrangement inside that would keep people safe. So you're right. These events are going to become magnets for anybody who has a message they want to send, or if it's just people who think, hey, you know what? I like the game day experience, so I'm going to recreate the game day experience, and I'm just going to watch the game on my TV that I put on the back end of my truck. And so it's got the potential to be very bizarre, even more bizarre than stuff that we've seen the past few months, if that's possible.
What does it mean that there is a new person who is at least nominally in charge of the Detroit Lions? Is there any significance to it, or is this just sort of like watching the British royal family?
It's a great question, because this is an organization that has been mired in far more dysfunction than not dysfunction for the past 60 years. A couple of years ago, they had a celebration of the 25th anniversary of the last time they won a playoff game. And I remember seeing that thinking, is that really something that you want to remind people of? I mean, it's been 25 years since you've won a playoff game. 25 years since you won the Super Bowl, I get it. But 25 years since you won a playoff game is not something that I think anybody should be acknowledging in a positive way, but that's the way this organization has been. Now, We played on PFT Live today some of the comments from Sheila Ford Hamp, who will take over for her mother, Martha Firestone Ford, who took over for her late father, William Clay Ford. And Sheila Ford Hamp says she's going to be involved. She's going to be there. There's a sweet spot for owners in the NFL where I think it's important if the owner is there every day, if the owner treats it like his or her primary place of business, if the owner is available, accessible, and it holds everyone else accountable. You know, when you, and nobody's been in a workplace for months now. Well, that's starting to change. But, you know, I remember being in a real workplace, and it was always different when the boss wasn't there. There was a different mood when the boss wasn't there, and there was a different mood when the boss was there. So I think it's important to be around, to set the standard, to show you care, but also stop short of meddling in the football operation. And there is that zone in the middle, Dan, that I think, you know, a guy like Robert Kraft has found. And it's important for someone with the Lions to be in that bubble, to be in that spot where there's true accountability, but also deference to the experts that they've hired to make the decisions when it comes to who's going to be on the field and what kind of systems they're going to use to try to win games.
Mike, always good stuff. These are wild times, and we're continuing to adjust with every next tweet and every next headline. Appreciate, as always, continued good health. Look forward to talking next week.
Thank you, pal. Take care.
That is Mike Florio. When we come back, I want to turn our attention back to baseball because that's been really the sense of urgency. And I really appreciate everybody jumping in and enjoying the Jim Riggleman conversation because he was really good. And I was excited to put him on. But, you know, some of the energy, some of the urgency that was clearly in his voice, talking about what this season is going to be like, that his urgency is emblematic of how the season is going to feel. There's a very, very smart baseball man who was on yesterday. He was actually happened to be the speaker at my college graduation. And actually gave a speech that didn't age well. Ooh, boy. I was thinking about that yesterday when I heard that George Will was going to be on with McNeil and Parkins. And I thought about the speech that he gave in 1991 to the graduating class of Duke University, in which he excoriated the Duke English department for moving away from the accepted canon of dead white male authors and trying harder to integrate the literary canon with the voices of people of color and women and LGBTQ before we were using that term, and how he said it was the wrong thing to do, and it was taking higher education and taking English departments in places to where they shouldn't go. And I'm thinking, yeah, he probably doesn't want people to find text of that speech in these times. Wow. But he is an avid baseball fan and nothing if not a smart guy. So I want you to hear what he had to say yesterday on The Score. That's coming up next.
Well, it produces this vast sediment of numbers because it's a game of discrete episodes. Ball one, ball two, this inning, this game, that game. This enormous sediment of numbers that enables you to compare Tris Speaker to Joe DiMaggio, Babe Ruth to Reggie Jackson. All of a sudden, you wondered if you could still do that because something had changed. And we know what changed it. It was chemistry.
That's the voice of baseball historian George Will. That was in Long Gone Summer, talking about the summer of 1998 and that home run chase between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. He's a smart guy, and he's been observing baseball for a long time. I certainly don't agree with him on all his observations and anything, baseball, outside of baseball. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, but it's never for a lack of thought or consideration. And George Will joined the McNeil and Parkins show yesterday on The Score. And their conversation began with Parkins asking him how he feels generally now about the state of baseball.
I think there's something worse than a short season culminating in a jerry-built postseason. Also that they can reap the postseason television revenues. Let me give you a couple examples. Suppose after, 60 games? Last year, Tim Anderson on the South Side had baseball's highest batting average, .335. Suppose over 60 games, he bats .406 this year, what Ted Williams batted in 1941. How are we supposed to think about that?
Mm-hmm.
Suppose at the end of this short season and protracted postseason, the Cleveland Indians win their first World Series since 1948. How are Cleveland fans supposed to think about that? Is it a big deal or is it ersatz and somehow phony? I don't know the answer to this, but baseball is bound up with the following truth. It is America's most severe meritocracy because over 162 games, you are what your record says you are. You can't say, well, we're better than that. No, that's what you are. And so we're gonna lose the essence of baseball doing this. Now, I'm not faulting Commissioner Manfred. I'm not faulting the owners. I'm not faulting the players. It's an agonizing position to be in. But baseball is unlike the NBA, which can gather in a few hotels in Orlando and make it up as it goes along. Baseball doesn't do that.
George, where is your level of optimism they'll be able to pull off a 60-game schedule without interruption?
Yes, well, looking on the bright side, as I'm generally not inclined to do, we can assume that they would avoid a spike of the virus. The fact is, the spikes are already coming hot and heavy. 23 players on the Clemson football team have tested positive for the virus. We saw what happened with the Phillies training camp, the adjacent Blue Jays training camp in Dunedin, next door to Clearwater in Florida, is shut down. We are in uncharted territory, so all this animosity and acrimonious negotiating may have been for naught, leaving us only with no baseball and even worse relations between labor and management.
How much damage do you think the discord between the players and management will do to the game?
Well, the discord was sown in the fact that the players, the union, really didn't negotiate very well, didn't have a good agenda in negotiations in 2016. And as a result, they came to this with a kind of chip on their shoulder, their collective shoulder in the Players Association. But the players often take the vigor and vitality of the free agency market as a measure of the health of the industry. And the free agent market, obviously, in the fall of and early winter of 2021, while they're negotiating the next collective bargaining agreement, the free agency market's going to be ghastly because every team is going to be short of money. So when, say, Chris Bryant hits the free agent market looking for, what, $20 million average annual value on a long-term contract, there are not going to be many teams equipped to do that.
Georgia, if you could wave a magic wand and make your game, baseball, a better game, what would you do to fix some of its biggest issues right now?
Well, the biggest issue for baseball right now is the pace of play. Not the length of the games, but the length of the games is produced by a slow pace of play. Today we have a game of the so-called three true outcomes: walk, strikeout, home run. We have a game in which it's between 3 and 4 minutes between the ball actually being put in play. This is a game that is just not going to appeal to younger fans. This is a game in which, let me give you a sobering number. The average age of the base viewer of baseball telecast is 57. Mm-hmm. Of the NFL, 50. Of the NBA, 42. There's a sense in which the baseball audience is literally dying. These are mm-hmm. ominous demographics. Demography is eventually destiny for enterprises like baseball, and it has to do something to correct it, and it has to begin by making things happen, a sense of more energy on the field.
We're talking to George Will from the Washington Post, baseball historian with us, Mack and Parkins on The Score. Some of the proposals that have come out of these negotiations, expanded playoffs, universal designated hitter coming to the National League, do you like the proposed changes to try to modernize the game a bit?
Well, the universal DH is coming because both here's one thing the union and the owners agree on. The union likes it because the DH is often a highly paid veteran. so it pumps up the average salary. The owners like it because the owners think you can never have too much offense. However many home runs you had, more would be better. So the universal DH is coming. I can live with that. I regret it, but I can live with that. Putting a runner on second base in extra innings at the beginning of each extra inning, that is not baseball. Sorry.
I agree with you. Would you be okay with bringing back ties instead of putting a runner on second base in extra innings?
Nope. Let them play. How many 15-inning games are there in a year? Not that many. Now, I understand the questions about potential injuries to pitchers. Let the shortstop pitch. Game will be over sooner rather than later in that case. This is not something fans are complaining about. This is not something that is a major issue as baseball competes for the allegiance of the rising generation of fans. There was a time when baseball had almost the undivided attention of the country between, I don't know, the 1st of April and when Michigan played Ohio State. Today, there are 7 weeks between the last NBA championship game and the first NFL preseason game. So the competition for the attention of sports fans and for the sports fans' dollar is more intense, and baseball is not competing as well as it should.
George, you know, something I've been thinking about and we've been talking about the last couple of years regarding baseball and its lack of young viewers, I find some of what comes out of the broadcast booths to be problematic. And I saw in the recent documentary, you singing the praises in the Maguire Sosa documentary of Harry Carey, who I was lucky enough to get to know for a dozen years before he passed in 98. And I don't know if we'll ever see his type again, but a guy who certainly wasn't hip, but a fantastic salesman for the game. A guy who sold tickets to White Sox and Cubs games, and maybe even Cardinals games way back when. Are we ever going to see his type again?
Well, I think we might, but I have to tell you that, I mean, Harry was a great fixture at Wrigley Field, but what puts people in the seats is high-quality, brisk, entertaining baseball. And that's what you really want. I frankly wouldn't trade Len Casper for Harry Carey at all. I prefer Len Casper.
It's a great endorsement of Len Casper. What do you like so much about Len? He's a friend of the show. He's on all the time.
Yeah, he's blushing right now, I bet.
Because he's a grown-up. He says the product is what we're selling here, not myself. I'm going to tell you what's happening and why it's happening and what might happen next, and you supply your own enjoyment. He treats the fans as mature baseball people.
George, what did the Cubs finally winning in 2016 mean to you?
Made me hungry to win in 2017. Didn't happen, but people always said, gee, once they win, won't you lose interest? Not at all. It just whet my appetite. You know, you go 70 years or so, as I did with waiting for the Cubs to put real excellence on the field. You're not that easily satisfied.
Yeah, people accused me of becoming a gluttonous Cubs fan because I wanted them to become the next dynasty, and then I was like, yeah, I want to be hated like Duke basketball or the Yankees. That would be a wonderful problem for the Cubs to have.
Well, it's part of the health of the good side of baseball is that dynasties are few and far between because there is so much talent in baseball, and baseball is so much better managed by the post-Moneyball generation of smart executives that it's really hard to have a durable superiority.
I got bad news for you guys. The Cubs are going to be the 85 Bears in double knits. You know, but that's all right. 30 years from now, Mike Montgomery still won't have to buy a meal in town when he comes back.
Yeah, you're probably right, Mac. Rub it in, okay? Thank you. We know. We're coming to grips with it all together.
This is a Sox town again.
Yeah,
Sox
right.
Can win in a sprint, George. The young White Sox can do this in a sprint.
They're going to be good this year. But the trouble is, if they win in a sprint, you're not going to be happy. In fact, you're going to be on balance dissatisfied.
Do you really believe that?
Why?
That people won't celebrate a team accomplishment like that?
I think that they might celebrate, but it's going to be a forced celebration. And there's going to be, in the back of their minds, there's going to be a sense that gee whiz, this isn't what we were hoping for.
Well, no, not what we're hoping for, but sometimes we got to take what we get. Now, we had a hockey team win a Stanley Cup in 13. Now, it played a little bit more than half the season. Certainly, that's not going to be the case in baseball, but nobody looks at the 2013 Blackhawks Cup as anything other than a cup they absolutely earned. And I would think a lot of people would have to take the same pride for a 60-game baseball season.
Well, we shall see. A baseball season that starts in August, basically, is hard to wrap your mind around, at least for this fan.
George, I'm curious what you think of the job that Commissioner Manfred has done.
I think he's in an untenable position. He has a unique kind of sport, one in which continuity and tradition matters more than in any other sport, in which the records matter more than in any other sport, a sport in which the ability to compare Tris Speaker to Frank Robinson over the long sweep of time is part of the majesty of the game. And he's dealing with the strongest union in world history, and I mean that. No union has more sway over the industry in which it participates than the Major League Baseball Players Association. So he has an impossible job with owners who are not united themselves. There's six or seven or so, at least, who think they'd be better off not playing at all this year. So managing an unruly, turbulent coalition of 30 strong-willed people, it seems to me Rob Manfred has done a heroic job.
Okay, I guess that's one of the things on which George Will and I will disagree. I mentioned that those things are myriad, but George Will appeared on McNeil and Parkins yesterday, with McNeil and Parkins there, burying the lead. That's really the story at this point. We have the Midday Midway coming up ahead of Sahadev Sharma at 11 and Mark Lazarus at 11:20. We're real busy, so let's have a little bit of fun next. There's something headed toward the United States that's kind of nasty and unprecedented in these unprecedented times. Also, you know that you've got a Florida story when every next detail you think that it could have been something out of a Carl Hiaasen novel. And also, if you are an escaped mountain lion, what are the first things you're going to eat if you invade the zoo? And this is, I didn't know that a mountain lion had tastes for these things or how they would develop such, but that is what we're going to do next on the Midday Midway on The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on The Score.
We have had an informative and energetic show today talking about the return of baseball and the instability regarding the return of baseball, what we don't know and what we don't know, what we don't know regarding how this is all going to work, and then trying to game all these new rules. Jim Riggleman popped on to help us figure out strategically some of what's going on, and he gave us some insight into how a manager has to manage differently, especially David Ross having to lean on a bench coach, Andy Green, who's actually managed before. David Ross hasn't, but this is all going to be new, and maybe he's got some sort of advantage because so many managers are going to feel like they've never done this before. Maybe it smooths things out for him. Mike Florio was fun at 10 o'clock. We sort of revisited some of the stuff he talked about last week with antibodies and infecting guys on purpose, and he called it the Twilight Zone. It certainly is that. It's just absolutely insane, bizarre stuff. And then we heard from George Will and heard his comments yesterday on the Scores Afternoon Show. Don't store dead iguanas in your restaurant, apparently. This is from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. It says, especially if they're of the 80-pound variety. One West Palm Beach pizza joint learned this lesson after a visit from state inspectors, although the massive reptile would prove to be the least of their worries. Yeah, the devil's in the details in this story. And if you are an avid fan of Carl Hiaasen, as I am, having
read everything he's ever written. His new protagonist happens to be a health inspector or sometime health inspector. Pizza Mambo, number 5. Papa Love Mambo. Was temporarily closed down for a day on June 18th after an inspection from the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation. They uncovered a litany of violations, including an iguana about 80 pounds being stored in a chest freezer. The natural follow-up question is, why was an 80-pound iguana being kept in a restaurant freezer? While the store owner couldn't be reached for comment, a Pizza Mambo employee told the Sun Sentinel the iguana was given to the owner as a personal gift for later consumption. The iguana was stored in a separate mini-freezer away from the restaurant's food. It was immediately thrown away after the owner was informed of the violation, according to the employee. Well, that sucks. You just lost 80 pounds of iguana meat? Was it a dressed iguana, or was it a whole frozen iguana? My guess is that that's probably a already prepared, gutted, skinned, ready to fricassee iguana. That's good stuff, man. That's good, healthy, grass-fed meat right there. And not to mention, Florida, the government is urging people to harvest iguanas. If you've been there recently, they're everywhere. They're in the canals, they're lying on bridges, they're up in trees. When the temperature drops a little bit, they fall down and they hurt people because they're huge. And they're all harvestable and edible and versatile. So why not? Just don't throw it out. The iguanas are considered a delicacy by some. There are companies that offer iguana sausage and iguana burgers. Iguana pizza isn't on the menu, but Pizza Mambo had other issues to deal with. The restaurant was dinged with 27 violations, including 10 high-priority offenses. Over 20 rodent droppings under a dry storage shelf, numerous dead roaches throughout the facility. A roach was found in a paper towel dispenser near the sink. Food contact surfaces, utensils, and cooking equipment not properly sanitized. Food with mold-like growth was found as well. I would say pay attention to that and leave the guy's iguana alone because it's frozen and it's not hurting anybody. Yeah, I would say this probably isn't good. CBS News reports a massive plume of dust from the Sahara Desert in northern Africa has been traversing the atmosphere thousands of feet above the tropical Atlantic Ocean and is now cloaking the Caribbean and closing in on the southeastern United States. Great. Just what we need. Probably full of murder hornets, too. While summer dust plumes are a common occurrence, this appears to be one of the most extreme in recent memory, so large it's been nicknamed the Gorilla Dust Cloud. Uh-oh. Hope it's not one of our gorillas. This is the most significant event in the past 50 years. Conditions are dangerous in many Caribbean islands, according to Pablo Mendez Lazaro from the University of Puerto Rico's School of Public Health. That's what he told the AP. On satellite images from space, dust typically appears somewhat subtle and faint, but this plume can be seen clear as day. And it can be seen from the International Space Station. It covers an enormous area. And then on Twitter and at various other places, there have been sort of before and after pictures of gorgeous, crystal clear Caribbean waters and skies that are turned gray as if there's been, it looks like Pompeii. It looks like some kind of volcanic eruption. So I don't know the current status, but this thick dust that makes for hazy yellow-brown skies is headed for the southeastern United States, and they are urging people to take action due to significantly reduced visibility and potential respiratory problems, just what Florida needs now. Actually, if it drives people inside, maybe it's the best thing to ever happen to Florida if it gets there and gives people a reason to do something, anything at all, to quell the up to the surge, the apparent spike. We don't know where it's going to end, but you can't be anything but terrified of the numbers in some of these states in the South and West. So maybe that ends up being a good thing.
The gorilla.
All right. So if you're an escaped mountain lion in San Francisco, and you have your run of the San Francisco Zoo, what are you going after and why? And I found this strange because I didn't think this would be the first thing there. Obviously, they're not going to go attack an elephant and they're not going to go attack a grizzly bear or whatever it is. But a young mountain lion is believed to have killed three marsupials at the San Francisco Zoo. Two wallaroos, that is a hybrid of a wallaby and a kangaroo, two wallaroos and a red kangaroo were found dead earlier this week in their outdoor exhibit. Findings suggest a local wild carnivore is responsible, the zoo said. A young mountain lion was captured earlier in the week but released, and zoo officials are investigating whether this could be the perpetrator. The animal, released before the announcement of the dead marsupials, is being tracked through a collar as part of the University of California Santa Cruz's Puma project. The mountain lion's release could be seen on a video posted by the Oakland Zoo. And a spokesperson for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife told ABC San Francisco, "We did not hear about these killings before the mountain lion was released." It's like it would have been nice to know, because maybe we wouldn't release it if it's got a taste for blood, if it's aggressive, if it only has a taste for marsupials. That's really not a concern. They also didn't make it clear if the animals were eaten or partially eaten or if they were just killed. Because it is, after all, a cat. And cats kill things for fun. They kill things just because they can. And then sometimes if you get these outside cats or feral cats, they'll bring them home and just show you, look, I got a bird, or I got a baby rabbit. Some of these outside cats here the other day. I see them skulking around just looking for things to kill because they want to. And now, by the way, we've got robins on the front porch again. And, of course, they didn't nest in I set out the little plate thing, like a supporter thing, because sometimes it's fun when they put a nest there. And it's right there. The structure, it's like a wicker trivet that I tack up above our door to make a perfect, idealized nesting spot. I do it every spring because it's fun to have them there, see them there, and follow the baby chicks and all that. And they made a nest, but they made it behind our porch light instead. I'm like, you idiot. Like, I got a ready-made nest thing, like an RV park for you, where you can plug it in and you've got propane and the whole thing. And now, instead, they've built it there. So now I'm worried about one of the local cats coming and getting our robins. We're wondering, this is what, our third nest here? And we think it might be the offspring, or members of the offspring, of one of the other robins that's been here in the past. So further bulletins, further updates on that front as events warrant. And that has been the Midday Midway, which we do often at this time. We've got a fun last hour of this edition of the Bernstein Show for you, starting in just a bit. Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney put together a comprehensive report on what is going on with the Cubs, looking at the roster, looking at positions, looking at plans, looking at how this is all going to work. And we're going to talk to him about some of the stuff, because I really hadn't considered the possibility of the trade market, and considering trying to figure out what constitutes proper reaction or overreaction when it comes to, hey, if Chris Bryant's leaving and we're out of it, let's trade Chris Bryant. And then with a good week, you could be back in it. So who knows what the hell is going on? The answer is Sahadev knows more than we do. So that's why we're going to talk to him, and he's coming up straight ahead on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.